Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI encourages the Church in Africa to have courage and embark on a new evangelization of the continent. Synod fathers look back to their three-week experience and express their hope for the future of their beloved Africa. And film critic Peter Malone talks about two newly released futuristic films, somewhat unsettling, but both rather interesting. Pope Benedict XVI is encouraging the Church in Africa to have courage and to embark on a new evangelization of the continent. The Pope's words came on Sunday at the concluding Mass of the Second Special Assembly for Africa of the Synod of Bishops. The three-week assembly, which gathered 33 cardinals, 79 archbishops and 156 bishops, focused on the theme, The Church in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, justice and peace. Chris Altieri has this report.
Pope Benedict XVI closed the Second Special Assembly of the Synod of Bishops for Africa on Sunday with Mass in St. Peter's Basilica.
Venerati fratelli, cari fratelli e sorelle, ecco un messaggio di speranza per l'Africa.
In his homily, the Holy Father said the global development model should be renewed so that it is able to include all peoples and not only those already adequately equipped. The Pope said globalization is a human reality that may be modified and that the Church works with its personalist and communitarian vision to guide the process in terms of real, authentically human relations, of fraternity and sharing. The Church said Pope Benedict is also committed to working with all available means to see that no African goes without his daily bread.
Mentre offre il pane della parola e dell'Eucaristia, la Chiesa si impegna anche ad operare con ogni mezzo disponibile perché nessun africano manchi il pane quotidiano.
Faith in Christ, explained the Pope, when properly understood and practiced, will lead individuals and peoples to freedom in the truth, and then to reconciliation, justice, and peace.
La Chiesa riconciliata è potente lievito di riconciliazione nei singoli paesi e in tutto il continente africano.
A reconciled Church, said Pope Benedict, a family of God without ethnic, linguistic, or cultural divisions is a powerful leaven of reconciliation in individual countries and throughout the African continent. In remarks before the Angelus prayer this Sunday, the Holy Father also had an announcement regarding the next synod meeting. He told the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square that during his upcoming visit to Cyprus, he shall deliver the Instrumentum Laboris, the working document for the next special meeting of the Synod of Bishops, which is dedicated to the Middle East.
In occasione della mia visita a Cipro, avrò il piacere di consegnare l'Instrumentum Laboris di tale assise.
At this Sunday's Angelus, the Holy Father, as usual, had greetings for the faithful in many languages, including English.
We have just concluded the Second Special Assembly for Africa of the Synod of Bishops, which has been a period of grace. I invite all of you to pray for our brothers and sisters of Africa. May the Lord, who granted sight to the blind man of the Gospel, renew their faith, that they may always see and follow clearly the path of reconciliation, justice and peace, which leads to salvation. Upon all of you and upon all the people of Africa, I invoke God's abundance blessings.
I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. The Synod of Bishops for Africa is finally over, and summing up 3 weeks of intense work, a final message was released, appealing for the united cooperation of all people of goodwill. Amongst the evils singled out as the causes of the many sufferings of the people of Africa were greed, corruption, and unjust economic structures fomenting conflict and poverty. And in their message, the 275 members of the Synod also shone the light on the responsibility of international corporations operating in Africa, saying they must stop their criminal devastation of the environment in their greedy exploitation of natural resources. Then the bishops insisted on respect for religious freedom in predominantly Muslim communities, and finally called on the continent's bishops, priests, religious and laity to become more united and to conform their lives more closely to the gospel. And as many of the synod participants personally expressed, they refuse to be discouraged by the enormity of problems in Africa and actually see hope for the future of the beloved continent. Like Ghanaian Cardinal Peter Turkson.
We've cried our cry. We've listened to the different cries, but we've also listened to encouragement and a lot of solidary messages. And the sense of solidarity which is built is just what everybody's going away with. Not anymore feeling alone in their dioceses to deal with problems alone, but feeling that the whole continental church is behind them. This is a big thing. This is a big thing.
Another person who expressed enthusiasm for the just-ended synod and its utility was Cameroonian Bishop Jean Mbarga.
We have discovered the situation in Africa, and we can give to the opinion, international opinion, what is the real situation in Africa. Now, the problem of to solve the problem is not only for the Catholic Church. We intend to collaborate with all the organizations who continue to want to do something for the future of Africa.
Yes, the future of Africa is still to be written. That's what Bishop Michael Woestenberg, Bishop of North Aliwal in South Africa's Eastern Cape province, told me.
Even with the Synod, some people ask me, are you not too pessimistic with all mentioning all these terrible things happening in Africa? And there are terrible things up to the day, to this day, today, happening and mentioning that. But I think pessimism would be to get stuck in that. But we are describing the past and the present, but not the future with that. That is something else. And so I think one has simply to look, to take stock of the situation as it is, name it, and get out the demons and to build something new. And I think that is what we are doing. And I was just wondering when I walked in the evening across St. Peter's Square here, and the first thing you see when you enter the Vatican is something from Africa, the big obelisk.
That's right.
Pointing up.
It's from Ethiopia, I think, isn't
it? I don't know exactly where this is from. The other ones have even inscriptions in Rome. This one is empty. You can put your whole story on it.
Actually, after this interview, I looked it up and discovered that it's actually a 13th century Egyptian obelisk. It's made of red granite, stands 25 and a half meters tall, and it was moved to Rome by the Emperor Caligula in the year 37 AD. A truly magnificent symbol of a yet unwritten future to come, as Bishop Woestenberg was saying, bearing in mind, he says, that as church, we always look up to the cross.
That is what we do in the church, to look at a cross that which simply says there is injustice, suffering done by people to people, but that is not the end of the story. There's much more to come, and that is why what I hope for and what I'm trusting in, yeah.
It's the synod is an occasion to speak of Africa, but it's easy. Africa is so many different things, so many different voices. You are speaking of a South Africa, which is so different to the South Africa somebody in Johannesburg or in Cape Town speaks about. And I don't think many people are very aware of your reality. Do you think it's important to have a synod such as this to be able to join your voice to those of the other African bishops, and what fruit do you think it can bear?
I think we got the seeds here, the fruits we must produce at home, then take the seeds with us and plant it there. whatever comes out, some people say, well, what is the synod about? And we can't save whole Africa or something like that. But we exchange our ideas. And I just said yesterday evening to one of my fellow bishops from South Africa, it is simply exciting to meet all these fine people of the church with that very different experience. And you see the faces and you don't know even through what suffering some of them really went. And to pay respect to that, to see it and to see and to draw strength from that. I think that is a very important part of that.
So it fortifies you in your mission as well.
Yeah, and then to know these guys are around. We are not always very good at cooperation in this. Africa is scattered and it is very, it's a huge variety as you have it in Europe as well. Portugal is not like Finland.
Absolutely.
So there's a huge amount of differences, but that we have a common vision and an interest. And I think that was really one of the very fine experiences for me at the Synod.
So, a time to be together, to compare notes, and as Bishop Wissenberg was saying, to get to know one another. And this is just one of the reasons that has given meaning to this Synod, which hopefully will bear precious fruit in the years to come.
What would you say the most precious moments have been during these 3 weeks?
I think, you know, one of the most precious moments of any synod, but particularly this one, has been the fact that 244 bishops, they didn't all succeed in coming, but all of them were members of the synod. Some of them couldn't come for illness or one or other reason. But that number of bishops representing the church in their different countries have come together, sat with the head of the College of Bishops, Pope Benedict, and together have looked at the situation that the world is in and the challenges that situation poses to the church.
Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier is Archbishop of Durban, South Africa, and one of the delegate presidents of the Synod itself.
And I think coming out with a mentality that is positive, an attitude that is positive, I think this Synod has been extremely focused. No one could say there's a conservative group here and there's a liberal group there. Everyone's been focused on more or less the same direction. Somebody said, we're all singing off the same page. We've still got to discover what's on the page, but we're singing from that page anyway. I think much to say, we know that we don't know all the answers to the problems, but we're all addressing ourselves to those problems. And I think the other thing is a positive spirit that's there. For instance, consciously people have said, let's not talk about problems in Africa. Because if you say you've got a problem, it means you're already admitting there's not much you can do about it. It's a challenge. We've got it within our means. We've got the resources. And if we put our minds to it, we can overcome that. I think that's what, for me, has summed up the Synod, has been that positive outlook.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
Well, I'd just like to say what a wonderful thing it has been, being here in Rome with all the other church representatives and the laity as well, and the openness with which people have felt themselves free to speak. Some of the lay auditors in order have been quite frank in the things they have said. We mightn't agree with what they have said, but the fact that they felt comfortable enough to be able to say it and not hold back and say it on the corridors, but not say it out in the hall. I think that's been very, very good. And I think what I've heard quite a few bishops remarking is how lovely it is to be able to listen to Radio Vatican and hear the interviews and getting different perspectives on Africa, which we don't always get from that 4 or 5 minutes that a person has time to speak about. After all, we're speaking on a particular topic, sometimes sent by our conference to do it. So we're not talking about our own experience of the church. And so listening to Vatican Radio has been a great filler for the background information that one needs about what's happening in Africa.
That makes me very happy.
I'm sure it does, because it's really what has been happening.
And Pope Benedict himself had words of thanks and encouragement for the Synod Fathers as they wrapped up their meeting, pointing out how participants had managed to avoid the temptation to speak more like politicians than pastors.
La tentazione poteva essere di politicizzare il tema.
He said that during the assembly, the Synod Fathers had found their true voice, the pastor's voice, addressing the Synod theme in a way that was at once concrete and spiritual, a way that not only makes sense, but that can really make the difference.
Era il grande problema del Sinodo e siamo, grazie a Dio, mi sembra, riusciti.
The Pope said this was the great challenge of the Synod, and the Synod Fathers were equal to it. Now, one thing the Synodal Fathers repeatedly called for during the Special Assembly is the active involvement of the laity in public life. My colleague at the English for Africa programme, John Baptist Tumasime, decided to find out more. And the person he asked to explain why the Catholic Church is so concerned about the role of the laity in public life is Father Peter Henriot, a Jesuit priest who has been working in Zambia for the past 20 years.
It's a very good question. I think it, you know, kind of two ways. One is there was a very strong challenge to political leadership in Africa. It repeated, actually, some of the emphasis that Pope Benedict XVI had made when he was in Cameroon and in Angola, saying that a major problem facing Africa is the failure of leaders to really serve the people. And I think that that could be agreed across the continent or so. So there's that recognition that the leadership that should be serving the people, not serving themselves or their family or their tribes or their regions, not serving their own futures, bank accounts somewhere, but serving the people, that that's a real challenge. So how do you get leaders who really do serve the people? And that's where the Synod raised up a point that what we need, and they used an expression that Pope John Paul II had used in the document Ecclesia in Africa, the Church in Africa, after the first African Synod. He said, we need saintly politicians. Now, a lot of people kind of smiled at that. Aren't those kind of a contrast in terms or so? But no, I think what the Pope was saying, we need lay people who are committed to public service with values. And that's what the Church should be able to help our laity really come with, the kind of values, the values of justice, of community, of solidarity, respect for women, of integrity of creation, of an option for the poor. You know, what we talk about, the values or the principles of the Church's social teaching, that's what our Catholic laity can bring. But this was a good, strong challenge from the Synod. The Church should be more forming that laity. You know, the basic catechesis is not enough to help you be a good head of state. You're going to need the understanding more deeply of what it means to be a Christian, what it means to follow Jesus' expression, you know, those who are called to be greatest are those who will be least. If you want to really be a great figure, then be a serving figure or so. So I think that that kind of a message came out so strongly in the Synod, that the Church must pay more attention, even suggested, you know, there should be special workshops or seminars or retreats for members of the political parties and things like that. I know in Zambia we've done that with some of the members of our Parliament who are Catholics, giving them days of recollection, giving them strengthening. I know that in many parts of Africa they've established a parliamentary liaison office, which isn't just on issues, but is also on kind of pastoral encouragement for the members of Parliament. I think that was a very strong point of the Synod. Our laity can contribute something with the values of our Church's social teaching, and they should be doing that.
The main theme of the just-ended Synod was the Church in Africa at the service of reconciliation, justice and peace. But John Baptist noticed there was also a sub-theme. You are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. Would this be in line with that concern, he asked Father Peter Henriot?
I think so. You know, you know what salt does to your food, it sort of makes it more palatable, gives it a special flavor. I've even seen Zambians put salt on their nchima, you know, the mealy meal, maize meal food or so. It gives a little extra taste. We need people who give a little extra life, a little extra salt to the political life. And, of course, the light of the world. We need people who are going to cast the light, the lens of our gospel, of the social values that Jesus said should be part of the kingdom of God. So when we say we need laity who are the salt of the earth, in politics, you know, they're bringing a kind of a special punch, a little flavor, a little extra life. And light, they're bringing clarity, They're bringing dimensions that are coming from our faith. And I think that's a very important issue.
Thanks there to John Baptist Tumasime, who was speaking to Jesuit Father Peter Henriot, head of the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection. And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he takes up from where we left off last week, when he analysed what has become a South African box office hit, District 9. He takes a look at two more futuristic films, showing right now in cinemas all over. The first is called Pandorum, and I began by asking him, what does Pandorum mean?
Pandorum is a word that they've coined for this film. It's about a disease that can affect astronauts who have been in deep sleep and wake up. So this particular film is, again, futuristic. It's set at the end of the 22nd century, I think, and Earth has really been destroyed. They're trying to set up colonies in outer planets, but it's a mystery as to what's happened, and the whole action is really confined to this spaceship when two of the astronauts wake up.
There's no one here except us.
And find that the passengers who are supposed to populate the new planet have become mutants and monsters. But there are a few other humans there trying to survive.
I just want out of this thing!
Do you know the symptoms of Pandorum? Starts with a shiver, an itch, a slow boil. The biological side effects of flying deep space, feeding into paranoia.
So it's a space film, really,
isn't
it?
It's a space film. I suppose people who like that kind of thing will remember the classic Alien and start remembering the Alien series. So, yes, darkness, mutants, fights. But there is a twist at the end.
Your mind has turned against itself.
And even though it is done by a German director and writer, I think it was financed by Hollywood, so as you can get from the hint, there is a bit of hope at the end of this one, despite all the darkness.
I see Dennis Quaid plays one of the leading roles.
He does, and he's involved in the twist at the end, so it's interesting. He's the captain of the spaceship.
Another film not for children.
Not for children, this one, no.
Okay.
Very dark, literally. Yes.
Okay, and that takes us to the last of our rather unsettling series, Surrogates.
Yes, this is a Bruce Willis film, and a bit disconcerting because at the opening of it he's got hair, and he looks as if he's had some plastic surgery or something like that.
Which wouldn't be unusual in this day and age.
No, but the real Bruce Willis does emerge. Actually, that's because of the nature of these surrogates. They're not only clones or androids of individuals. They give a bit of a history during the credits of what's happened scientifically, that android robots resembling the self can be linked to the mind so that the person then can stay home and send out the surrogate to experience life.
Robotic human surrogates combine the durability of a machine with the grace and beauty of the human body. With most people living their lives through their surrogate selves, our world has become a safer place. Take a seat in your STEM chair, and just with the power of your mind, you can control your surrogate and send it out into the real world. You can live your life without limitations. You see what they see, feel what they feel, and become anyone you want to be from the comfort and safety of your own home. You can finally live the life you've always dreamt of without any risk or danger to yourself.
So they're starting to make comment that modern technology is actually isolating the individual. and substitute experiences are the order of the day. There's a murder, so it actually works as a murder mystery.
We are confronted with an unprecedented situation. Two people have died while connected to their surrogates.
And Bruce Willis's surrogate, and he was himself, a police detective.
I think we may actually have a homicide here.
There's also a colony of rebels protesting against this kind of technology.
The public cannot be allowed to get the idea that using a surrogate can be fatal.
Especially if it's true.
So I found it rather interesting
in
this whole...
It does sound interesting.
Yes, and it's not particularly violent in the way that some of these other films are.
And from what I understand, each individual may have several surrogates.
Yes, one of them, who seems to be the villain, actually has a whole cupboard full, so to speak, and can assume all these different identities. He's wanting to stir up rebellion against surrogacy. And there's quite an impactful scene at the end when a lot of the surrogates just collapse in a city street. So images of a future that could be frightening.
You changed the world and now you want to destroy it?
It looks very sophisticated.
It is. It's interesting that a lot of the progress that we talk about, say, in the media, in papers, you know, advances in science and technology, when the filmmakers get to them, they take Mary Shelley's attitude and everything seems to be, you know, the Frankenstein monster. So that the films generally are warnings against the dangers. And this kind of surrogates finishes up, in a sense, a kind of sermon against the isolating of our own personalities and feelings and letting... computer games and various other things that we do take over our lives.
And of course there's a long history of films which deal with mutants and can we call them surrogate
yes.
existences. I mean, I look back as far as Blade Runner and
well,
so many
it's
more
it's one of the
that.
Classics, yes. And there was another one about 10 years ago, The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's
which
right.
It was about clones.
That's
and
right.
And then, you know, who is the real person and who is the clone?
Okay, so an interesting film.
I thought they were
conceptually
interesting in their way, yes.
Philosophically interesting also.
Yeah, so for some, they might be interesting films to talk about rather than to see.
Like me.
There you are.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Peter Malone, head of the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.